Good to see you, Sophia. Thank you. Looks like a few more people are coming in. All right. And let us say the Sufi invocation together, please. Towards the one, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being. United with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. And I'm going to use this word because it's the first word of the Holy Quran, but we'll see that the same sentiment appears in other sacred manuscripts. So we begin with Bismillah. We begin in the name of God. So the title of this presentation is, or I will say of Murshid's offering, let me be correct in how I frame that, is blessed with the impression of glory. And that comes from a quote by an icon that says, our soul is blessed with the impression of glory of God whenever we praise God. And so the question is, what is praise? But not prayer. And this is an interesting subject because Murshid tells us people hold different opinions regarding prayer. Some say that as God knows all their wants, why should they pray? Others wonder if it is right to pray. Like why should I bother God? Why should I ask of anything for myself? I'll pray for others, but I don't pray for myself. Others say that praise is the only prayer, while some claim that they themselves are God, meaning, of course, God's within us. We are all part of God. So that for them, there's not a necessity to pray. However, Murshid says to us, there is a necessity for prayer and praise. And this is so beautifully put. If nothing's remembered from the class, perhaps it's only this. Praise of the beauty of God is so important, for we must learn to recognize and praise the beauty of God as manifest in all creation. And in this way, we impress beauty upon our soul. So, this beauty about us, we're talking about the fungi, we're talking about nature, rain, the elements, Murshid emphasizes those very much. When we impress ourselves with the beauty of all of creation, we make that impression on our very soul, and we're able to manifest that beauty through ourselves. And as it is said in the prayer psalm, thy beauty do we worship. To thee did we give willing surrender. We then become the friend of all, Murshid says, and without prejudice, when we can be impressed with this beauty and see God manifest in all of creation. And for this reason, the Sufi cultivates the heart. And we know that the emblem of the Sufi is the heart between two wings, meaning that when the heart is cultivated, we can soar into the heights of heaven. And we read that in the prayer, Khatum, raise us above the distinctions and differences. We are perfectly justified and right in praying for all our desires, and there's nothing that God is not able and willing to grant. Now, I presume that all of you do pray. I know I do. I lean into prayer a lot. And all I can say is that I've feel like I've been blessed with a response to prayer. Now, sometimes it's different than what I might be praying for, but when I look at it another way, it's like, ah, that's really what I needed or really needed to have given to me. Or even sometimes if it's a challenge, I needed that challenge to understand something in a different way. So it's good to state our prayers, and we'll learn more about that. There's nothing that God is not able or willing to grant. But we should distinguish between what is transitory and what's lasting. And what's everlasting, we could also say. What is worthwhile for our benefit and what is worthless? And Murshid says, and what is worthwhile is beauty of personality, devotion, love. These are all desirable, but not those things that are transitory and unsatisfying. I mean, we can see that material possessions, while momentarily may be of reward to us, they're transitory, you know, and at some point, I think we mature beyond the desire for more, 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 and see that less, less, less is even better, better, better. It depends where you are on that curve. You know, for those that are younger, of course, there is a period of acquisition and growth. And as we sort of go to the other side of that curve, that bell curve, the giving away and being happy with less is sometimes very good for us. So again, the beauty of personality, devotion, love, these are desirable things, and we must learn to determine what is meaningful and what is everlasting. Okay. There are some people who have reached the stage at which they are beyond all desire, both earthly and heavenly. But they continue to pray because prayer brings them closer to God in their limitation. And they expand from the state of limitation to the unlimited being. This expansion and unification are the highest meaning of prayer. So there we go. This expansion and unification is the highest form of prayer. This is where we're headed. This is the purpose. So, leading up to this class, I myself have been trying to practice this. I can't say that I've perfected this practice, but it's something that I'd like to suggest for all of us to take up. It's very easy, it just requires mindfulness. So, as I said, Bismillah, Bismillah, Bismillah. Bismillah is the first word of the Holy Quran, meaning we begin in the name of God. But we also see this in the Holy Torah and in the Old Testament of the Holy Bible. The first words read in the beginning. So I'd like to suggest this practice. As I said, it's a practice of mindfulness, using this word Bismillah. And I've throughout my life, I've tried to be mindful of it, and it's pretty amazing what it does. And I'll talk about the meaning of this word deeper. But for example, I open my eyes in the morning, Bismillah, I begin in the name of God. Or I step through a threshold, Bismillah. Or start to make a meal or prepare something to eat, Bismillah. Or get in the car to drive, Bismillah, I begin in the name of God. Especially in Florida, they drive like crazy people down here. But you know, everything, beginning a walk, taking up exercise, starting a project, starting to read a new book, Bismillah, begin in the name of God. And Bismillah, its meaning, we've heard this, we've all heard it, and we've all used this word, but what it does is invites and welcomes the blessings of God in to help us. It also is the blessing to say prior to beginning or undertaking anything. We take our first step, Bismillah. We wake up, Bismillah. Bismillah starts and it serves to start an action in which a person asks God for blessing upon the action. We go to work, Bismillah. We sit down for a meal, Bismillah. It's a beautiful prayer. So, can we just say this together? Let's do it 33 times just to hear the word and the musicality of it. And to try to be mindful, there's no shame if you forget, but you know, like even opening, I open the medicine cabinet, Bismillah, you know, or open a drawer, Bismillah. And then I realize, oh my God, I've forgotten it 10 times for the one that I've remembered. But it's good to keep remembering and remembering and not shame oneself for having forgotten. It's good to notice how forgetful one can become. Okay, so let's just say, Bismillah. I'm going to hold up for just a moment. Kareem, Can you unmute and say the word Bismillah for us? I know this is part of your prayer and language. That would be helpful to us if you're there.
Bismillah.
Bismillah. You hear that? Say it again.
Bismillah.
Okay. Did you hear it? There's a little bit smala. Say it again slow.
Bismillah.
Okay, there's a little bit of that extra la in that H at the end. So can we try to say it like Kareem? Kareem, I'm going to mute myself, honey, and you're going to lead us, all right? I'll count for us. I'll give you a high sign when we're finished after 33. Kareem, you lead us. Make sure we can hear you. And I'm going to mute myself and I'll give you a high sign when we've done 33. Is your technology working?
Yes.
Okay, you lead us in this practice. We're going to follow you and your sound code. Go.
Bismillah. 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 Bismillah, 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 Bismillah. Bismillah, 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 Bismillah.
Thank you so much, Kareem. You can mute yourself now, dear. And we've just banked a whole bunch of those bismillahs, by the way, if we forget some along the way. But I'm so grateful. Thank you so much to hear that. There's kind of a, if you look it up in the way it's written phonetically, there's the bit sma la. And that at the end is so important. We don't aspirate in that way in our English language, but if we think of it as a way of sharing the breath, we're sharing the vibration of that prayer in space with the la. So don't forget to use that extra sound and release of that vibration. And remember that this invites the blessings of God upon our every action. And what a beautiful thing to do, to be mindful of. So I'd like to move on to Murshid's teachings, where he talks about these five aspects of prayer. And I had mentioned, and I'll give you everyone of another mo moment, that maybe, again, these notes will be online, but we're going to do an exercise after we review each of these aspects of prayer. And we're going to have a pause and a time to reflect. We might want to write a few things down that we can revisit. And there may be, of course, new things over the month until we meet again, that you'll add to this list, but I think it'll be useful. So, the first aspect of prayer is thanksgiving. Thanksgiving. Yashakur. And we're not going to do that wazifa, but that's what it is if we would say it as a sacred name. Yashakur. Yashakur. Thanksgiving. So the first excuse me, the first aspect of prayer is giving thanks to God for the numberless blessings that are bestowed upon us at every moment of the day and the night, of which we're mostly unconscious. I know a lady down here who cannot close her eyelids all fully. Do you know what discomfort that gives her? Do you know how she's not able to sleep fully? That we can blink? My God, what a great blessing. I'm thankful that I can blink, close my eyelids. I'm thankful that I can speak, that So many things. So this is where I'd like us to pause. And if you'd like, you can write a few things down that you're thankful for. And maybe it's qualities of your personality that you give to others. Maybe it's just your physical capabilities. Maybe it's your friendships. I mean, what are we thankful for? I'm thankful that we meet like this every so often and share this friendship and this brotherhood and sisterhood. So I'm thankful. So I'm going to be quiet and you can just reflect. And you can just do it with your eyes closed, or if you want to make a few notes, please feel free to do so. So thankfulness, giving thanks to God's numberless blessings, bestowing those upon us. The second aspect of prayer, and again, you can revisit these. It would be good to do that as a little homework and moments of reflection until we have our next message class. The second is humbling oneself before God and asking forgiveness. Mercia describes it in this way. Excuse me. The second aspect of prayer is laying our shortcomings before the unlimited perfection. Laying our shortcomings before, excuse me, the unlimited perfection of the divine being and asking for God's forgiveness. So, where are those places where we could do better? Where are those places where I've faltered throughout the day? So those are things that I can ask God's forgiveness for. I can do better. Please help me. This makes us conscious of our limitations and therefore makes us humble before God. And I always reflect on this, those lines from the Lord's Prayer. It says, "Forgive us our trespasses." And this act of asking for forgiveness, because if we really are earnest in that, and if we believe we are forgiven, then that opens the doors to our heart, to the next line, which says, as we forgive those who trespass against us. It's so easy to hold on to things. We feel like we're getting a strength from that. But truth is if we can forgive others and in some regard forgive ourselves while taking ourselves to task, it's a very healthy thing to do, very wholesome. And as I was reflecting on this teaching today, I thought of Mercia Tadiot. I can't tell you how many times I witnessed things that happened. I was shocked, actually, in some regards, how disrespectful people can be. But of course, that to me is a it reflects something of their nature when they're disrespectful to someone who earns and deserves our respect. And so, I'd kind of look at the source of where those actions were coming from and without trying to judge it, just be mindful of it and saying, oh God, please don't let me act in those ways. You can always be used as a bad example, I guess. But Mursha Diet said many, many times to me, when he was reflecting on his interactions with people and things that I guess had really hurt him. And he would say again and again the words that Jesus said from the cross, forgive them, Father, they know not what they do. Forgive them, Father, they know not what they do. And that's very beautiful. And it taught me something. Even if the person isn't capable of seeing their actions and isn't capable of asking for forgiveness, we can do that on their behalf. Forgive them, Father, they know not what they do. And I know some of you have heard this story, but it's coming to mind and I think I should share it. I was living in India, and there was a schism between different groups of Buddhism. There was a deity that one group was convinced they should worship because they felt that that deity helped them very much in this life. His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, really felt, and the oracle kind of confirmed this, that this deity was, he was like the piper that had something that had to be paid. So people were asked, it wasn't demanded, but they were asked to please give up this practice because they felt that it was not to the individual's benefit and basically to Tibet as a whole. And people got radical around this. Imagine Buddhists doing this, but they did. I was even in Kali Chakra initiation in Indiana with Dalai Lama came, and it was his brother, his elder brother, Taxter Rinpoche, was living in Bloomington and had a center and invited him to give this initiation. And there were huge demonstrations. The government was there, Secret Service and CIA to protect people. But well, of course, Dalai Lama, it was a matter of state. I mean, he's the head of Tibetan state in exile. So of course they were there to protect him. But you drive into the grounds and there were all these signs and demonstrations and people coming at the cars. So it was really a radical time. Well, okay, cut back to now I'm in India and I'm in, and you've heard this, some of you, but it's, I think it bears repeating. So I'm in the Tibetan colony in New Delhi, and it's like seems like it's late at night, and someone comes knocking furiously at the door. Just in, you could tell it's a panic, and we're told that news had come that there were these assassinations at the Tibetan School for Buddhist Dialectics, which was founded by His Holiness. It's a building that's actually attached to the monastery where the Dalai Lama lives. And this was a place that would educate lamas and Rinpoches that had been sort of, they would be then sent to the West to bring the Dharma to the West. Well, by the cloak of darkness, there were seven assassins, and they know this because there was one person that survived for a certain amount of time that could recount what had happened. But they killed a lama from Taiwan that was the translator for His Holiness in Chinese. They killed, or assassin, they called it assassinations, the head of the Buddhist dialectic school, and they also assassined another monk. They were all together in the same room, but they were all very close to His Holiness and important in terms of the dialectic school. They killed the abbot of the, or the director of this Buddhist dialectics. Well, my Tibetan friends, we have to go. It was an overnight bus, or at least a 13-hour ride by bus, but we immediately prepared to leave to go up to Dharamsala, which was, of course, kind of dangerous, but we felt like we had to be there. And there was a huge prayer festival for these people that had been killed. All of the high-ranking lamas, including my teacher, His Eminence Khamtul Rinpoche, were put under house security with police, guarded police around. They didn't go out for months, maybe even more than a year or so, because there was a long list of other assassinations to come. And so these high-ranking or highly respected lamas were on that list. It was a very dire time. His Holiness came out and he talked about this incident. There was a huge prayer festival, lasted 31 days. We repeated Om Mani Padme Hum. Photos of the crime scene were put in the library for people to witness and to pray. And His Holiness said, and this is why, forgive them, Father, they know not what they do. It's a lot of words to get here, but maybe it helps. Dalai Lama said, first words. When this happened at first, then when I first heard of this, I became very angry. Imagine the Dalai Lama admitting to that. And then he said, then I remembered the teachings of the Dharma and my mind became soothed. And next would happen, it's like, forgive them, Father, they know not what they do. I felt sorrow and compassion for these assassins because I knew that they had a great karmic debt that they would have to be repaid, if not in this life, in a future life. And he said, also while remembering the great souls that passed. And he said, they were close to me and they were of great service and help to me in getting the teachings out. So anyway, this is forgive them, Father, they know not what they do. There's always a consequence. And forgive them, Father, they know not what they do. If we could remember this, we could be relieved of a lot of suffering and and perhaps hanging on to things that happen to us that are hurtful. So as I was reflecting on this, and I hope I haven't diverged too much away from the subject, but I'm going to bring it back because there are these lines of the prayer of Saint Francis of Assisi. And I think you all know I had the great opportunity to meet Mother Teresa and work for a few days in her refuge there in Calcutta. And I worked within the orphanage and with the crippled children. And one of the things that she would do, because many people came from outside to gather and pray in the evening with her and the sisters. And she would gather with them in this big courtyard outside the chapel. And she would hand out this prayer. And her mantra was, the family that prays together stays together. The family that prays together stays together. And of course, we're this worldwide family that we come together. Again, I'm grateful for, thanksgiving for, that we come together and we pray together and we hold these prayers together. And she handed out on little pieces of paper the prayer of Saint Francis of Assisi. I won't say the whole prayer. Maybe later I'll say some other words, but the end of that prayer says this: O divine master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in the giving that we receive, and it is in the pardoning that we are pardoned. So by humbling oneself before God, we do not lose any virtue, Mercia teaches us. The joy of humility is never known by the proud. What a great line. The joy of humility is never known by the proud. The effect produced upon one's own feeling is as if, by our very humility, we have opened the doors of the shrine of God who is in our heart. We open those doors. So, for a moment, let's just take a moment to again reflect. You may want to note a few things or make a mental note. First of all, to go within, knowing that this is the shrine of God within the heart, and to reflect on those aspects of our life where we could become more skillful, more attentive, and ask that we are made stronger and more diligent in our efforts. The third aspect, and there are five, I don't know if I've said that, but trusting in God. The third aspect of prayer is to tell God one's difficulties and troubles. Like a little child going to their parent, I have something that hurts, or somebody hurt my feelings. We can do that before God. And we go and we tell God one's difficulties and one's troubles and ask God for what one needs and what one wants even. And who else deserves this trust but God? We could only be helped by others to a certain extent. The more one studies human nature, the more one feels inclined to bring one's troubles and sorrows before God alone. And this is a part of what is taught in the form of prayer. And so I was mentioning to someone on one of my walks, I was talking about something troublesome to them. And I said, you know what helps me? And so I'll suggest this, that we do this for the next few moments, is I say, sometimes if it's just so I can't see my way through it, I imagine that I'm bundling this trouble or this circumstance up in a beautiful package. And then I'm going before the altar of God and I'm placing it there. I'm turning it over and I'm asking for God to pick this up and to help me see my way through it. So we can put our troubles and our concerns before God, and we can ask for help, and we can ask for, it's not like there's a magic eraser. I mean, they try to make you think that with cosmetics. It's not true, by the way. Don't spend your money. But and the ones for my walls and sinks never worked either. The magic eraser by Mr. Clean. But anyway, but what it does help is it helps to illuminate the situation and give us insight. And with that illumination, we can see our way through it. We have clarity. And we can even have this sense that maybe this troublesome thing is actually for our own good. It can help develop compassion, forgiveness, tolerance, forbearance, and it can make us stronger. It can rise above it. So let's take a few moments and think about trusting God, putting those things that we really need help and support with at the throne of God. It can be the altar. Sometimes I think at this beautiful throne that's the throne of God with the presence of God there, just at the feet of the throne. And we can do this for others too. There's someone that we know is having health challenges. Put that trust in God. Or if we ourselves are challenged in some way. And of course, who isn't in life? It's part of life. It's part of being human. And we can move on. Again, these sections will be on in the notes on the website if you want to refer to them. I think it's good. It's like a little retreat that we can do regarding prayer and reflection throughout until till we meet again, which is technically going to be sooner than later, but it's a good habit to get started. So the fourth aspect of prayer is loving the unseen God. And Murshid says, the fourth aspect of prayer is like the call of the lover to the beloved. No doubt there is a higher form of prayer, and it is to be able to pray in this manner. And we must rise above the ordinary level of thinking and life to do so. This kind of loving is evolving by the lesson of love. And for this love, there's no disappointment. And only the love of God can fulfill the desire of the human soul. And all other forms of love are only a stepping stone. We learn to love in the material way so that we can learn to love in a spiritual way. So there are stepping stones that lead to the love of God. And Murshid says, this love of God, it's a joy, the joy, its joy is perfect. The love of God is living and everlasting, living and everlasting. And I keep hearing those words, Yahayo, Yah, Kayum, the eternal, the everlasting, the alive, the living. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm, even as a child, was kind of very interested in religion beyond what's probably normal for most kids. I was always trying to go to church, and most kids are trying to get away from church. But I also was fascinated. I don't read a lot of people say, oh, do you read these mysteries, or do you read this novel, or do you know this author? And in that way, I'll admit I'm very ignorant, because what I do is I spend a lot of time reading the poetry and the autobiographies and the biographies and stories of the saints. And I love those stories. I feel like they're maps. They're maps of, if you want to get somewhere, if you want to have that feeling, that burning love of God, the way the saints did, you follow them, and they've written about it, either in their poetry or in their autobiographies or other biographies of people having witnessed them. For me, I find that very helpful. I just share that. And it doesn't, I'm real connected, as you all know, to the Carmelite tradition, the monastic tradition. But I also know how I felt so inspired, so inspired by reading the Gospel According to Sri Ramakrishna, which had a large section in it that was biographical. I mean, when I read those things, it takes me into another sphere of understanding. It's not that I don't fall from that, but it's like being in a state of grace and joining somehow with those great beings that have really gotten somewhere on the spiritual path. And it helps to move me a little bit along. And I share that with you, because you may want to do that if you don't already do that. So let's pause again and reflect on feeling God's love streaming towards us and our love returning to God. There's that beautiful metaphor of Rumi, like a water wheel, returning again, returning again. And so just feeling, try using whatever means you can to arouse that feeling of great love. And of course, although in this teaching, Mercy says God's unseen, but really God is manifest in everything. So David earlier was sharing the beautiful landscape that he's in this weekend with his family. And that creates a kind of awe and a feeling of love for God that have manifests such beauty. So nature can do that and other beautiful things. So think about that feeling of God within streaming upwards and reaching out, and you reaching back in, this water wheel constantly moving, sharing love. The last aspect of prayer is at-one-ment, and it is hyphenated in the teaching, at hyphen one hyphen ment, at-one-ment. The fifth aspect of prayer is to know God, and in this way, to draw nearer to God. This is the real meaning of the expression at-one-ment, which means complete union. It cannot be learned, it is a natural tendency. It is the attraction of the soul to God. And of course, God is in the soul. It can be self-revelatory. It's like the most content, relaxed moment you've ever felt in your life, where everything just feels perfect. That's it. If you've ever felt it once, you know it. Go to that place to remember. It cannot be learned. It's a natural tendency. It is the attraction of the soul to God. It is like the negative pole of the electric wire, which is attracted to the positive pole. There's always this pull. We're always being drawn to that. It means that happiness depends on our nearness to God. Happiness depends on our nearness to God. And this too has been taught in the form of prayer. So I'm going to say a little poem here by Rumi, and then we're going to pause, and I'll read these words, and we'll take a brief pause and reflect on these words and see how they resonate in your heart and soul. The master Mevlana Jalaluddin Rumi said, "What was in that candle's light that opened and consumed me so quickly? Come back, my friend. The form of our love is not a created form. Nothing can help me but that beauty. There was a dawn, I remember, when my soul heard something from you. I drank water from your spring and felt the current take me." So that at 1 minute is like this ultimate sort of forgetting of oneself and this absolute sort of falling back into this union. Seek to know that that's a big part of the spiritual path, is to find that place. And now we're going to do a practice. I have another sentence. We'll have the closing prayer. If you'd like to have conversation around this teaching or any questions or sharing, I'm here for you. So the last practice is one of the sacred names, and it's Mujib. It's spelled Mujib, but pronounced mu and long e, mu, Mujib. So the mu is a little bit shorter. Mujib. So what does that mean? Because we've not done that practice together, but it means this. Al-Mujib is the one who answers all prayers. Of course, it's a beautiful wazifa to do with this teaching. This response to prayer matches the genuineness of the asking. So be most sincere when you ask in prayer. The Quran says, "Call on me and I will answer you." And we know that in the Holy Bible, it also says, "Ask and it shall be given. Knock on the door and it will be opened." So we hear these same teachings in different words in different traditions, but here, Mujib, it means the imperative here is for us to act and to act through prayer. So this activates something. The root of Al-Mujib suggests that the act of asking in prayer is a light that penetrates our inner darkness of confusion and shines upon our very self. So it's like wherein we cannot figure it out, we ask in prayer, and it's like we're going down into that mind, mine, not mine, M-I-N-E, of self with that lantern so that we can see clearly. It's giving us that light. And it's revealing what we're really asking for. So again, as I said myself, sometimes I'm asking for one thing in prayer, and it doesn't seem to be getting answered, but if I'm mindful, it is. It's just in a different way. You know, I'm prone to say these novenas. I've invited a few of you to join that group. And those of you that may want to, please let me know. I can send you how to sign up. It's a worldwide prayer group. And at the end of this, you know, we say novenas for for 9 days. And at the end, there's a line in there that says, I'm gonna mess it up, but hopefully you can get the intent. But it's like, even though my prayer has not been answered in the way that I've asked for it, I trust that my prayer is being answered for my best, you know, soul outcome. And so that's also a trust that that's happening and unfolding. Okay, so Majib does that. It gives us this light, this little coal man's lighter lantern to go down into the coal mine itself and have this illuminated. And let's see. Okay, this addresses the often repeated question as why should I pray when God already knows what I need? But here we're being told that it is in the asking that we receive. That's another line from the Bible. Ask and you shall receive, which leads to the next point. These are all descriptions of Al-Mujib. Invoking Ya-Mujib, it's not simply seeking an answer. So it's not like, give me this, okay, I'm getting it. No. It means to pay attention and listen. So we're praying, and while we're praying, we're opening the ears of the heart to listen to the reply. If we're not listening or are too distant, so feeling, really get into your prayer, like it wants to make you cry, you want to do it, you want to get it, you want to hear God. So if we're not listening or are too distant in our feeling, we may not be near enough to Al-Majib to receive the answer that is always there. So if it seems obscured, pray harder. I think I told you I used to do a lot of sweat lodges and with some of the Native American medicine men and medicine women, you'd hear people gasping because it was so hot and uncomfortable. And they'd say, if you're suffering, pray harder. Well, it's kind of like that, just pray harder. So the repetition of Ya Mujib, Mujib is it allows us to listen with our heart and to hear God's answer. And sometimes it happens in the song of a bird or the rustling of a leaf or the flapping of a butter. I mean, listen, tune in and listen. Now, Kareem, I'm going to ask you again to unmute. Let me hear how you would say this sacred word. It's one of the 99 names of God in the Quran, Mujib. Not sure he's there. Some I think he's Ya Mujib, right? Ya Mujib. We got it. You want to lead us in it? I'm going to mute. Kareem, and you lead us, okay? We'll follow you. I'll give you the high sign when we've done, we'll do 33 of these again, okay?
Yes.
Now, if everyone could a few times to yourself repeat it in a whisper, and then just feel the vibration of Mujib in the heart. Yeah, Mujib. Last closing words, my Murshid. By praising and praying to God, the soul is filled with bliss. Even to utter the name of God is a blessing that can fill the soul with light, joy, and happiness, as nothing else can do. So it's so good for us to pray. I think it's very good for us to take up the prayers that an icon, our Murshid, has given us. And I think it's also good, in addition, to speak just out loud to God, and those become our prayers. It becomes a conversation and a prayer. So, let us close with the prayer Khatum, and I have a few words to say, and then we can have open mic. O thou who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the Lord of heaven and earth, open our hearts, that we may hear thy voice, which constantly cometh from within. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Most merciful and compassionate God, give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide men. Send us the peace of thy divine spirit, and unite us all in thy perfect being. Amen. And I'd like to dedicate the merit of this class for all those that maybe are living in a situation where they're not even capable of a moment of prayer, and that our prayers can benefit them. And that in our country, where there are wildfires in one place, floods in another, the opportunity of millions of people being without electricity because of the grid being taxed, we ask for relief to be given and that health and help is given. We know that there are so many places that are troubled in the world. They're torn by war and devastation. Oh God, please let there be peace on earth. And solace given to those in the midst of those devastating situations. And let us give our thanks that we ourselves are in the safety of our homes, in beauty, surrounded by loved ones, with enough food to eat and shelter. How blessed we are. Thank you, God. Thank you, God. And I thank God for all of you for being here and taking the time to join me. I have one public service announcement. I don't know that I've alerted anyone to this, but I know I've been a little troubled by this. Our web host, I got a bill that was like, I think I usually pay like $149 or $179 a year, and I got for hosting the web, and I got this bill, and it was like nearly $500, and I was really taken back because they've been the web host from the beginning for us, and so I called, and I got bounced around. I even tried crying and begging and pleading. I said, please, you know, my friends, I mean, they support this endeavor on the website, and I feel like it's a disservice to have to spend so much money to keep these teachings on the web. And please, can't you make a, you know, can't you make a concession? We're a nonprofit, which they knew, and et cetera, et cetera. And they were unflappable. And they said, well, we can see that you've paid this amount for X amount of years. I mean, it's been 2007 when we first got the website up and going. So, you know, nearly 20 years. And I never really had much of an increase in this. And they said, we're just trying to bring our fees in line with the norm. And I said, well, And it's troublesome because to migrate a whole website to another platform or another web host is daunting. So I'm only sharing that with you because I know so many of you are very kind and generous. But if everybody gives a little bit more, I've been asked by the Sufi Museum in the Netherlands and by the author of Mirshad Hidayat's biography to design the cover, and they're wanting to pay. They said we'd like to give something to your organization and the work you're doing. So I'm earning a little bit that way and in other ways that I can with whatever skills and opportunities that arise. But I'm putting that out there, and I'll probably put it out there again just to, just to be mindful that in order to keep these teachings out there, we, maybe a couple extra dollars a month would be helpful. So because it's more than doubled, almost tripled. So, and I'm making a commitment to you that I'm going to continue to on this dialogue to try to get this fee reduced, if not now, for the next year. So I'm on it and I'm working on it. So I'm just letting you know of that dilemma, and I'll figure it out. But we can also figure it out together. So I send you my love and thank you very much. And God, where there's a will, there's a way. So I'm asking for your prosperity too to be granted.